What's up, America? It's Chad the Bird. Oh my God. It is so hot. If you're in Chicago right now, you are gripped in a massive heat wave. So the AC is cranked and we're all wearing wet towels. And it's kind of sexy, not going to lie. Clark is not here. He is doing the Register's annuals Great Spike Rides Across Iowa, a.k.a. Ragbri, which means he's out in it, which means he should be hydrating. So if you're listening, Clark, electrolytes, we need you, buddy. We need you to come back from this soul journey that you're on. But while you're gone, don't worry, because though I am alone in the studio, I have my trusty bottle of Jepson's Malort to get me through it. When I do a shot of Malort, it's almost like I got another me here. A different me. A strange me. A me with red eyes and a mustache that makes me do things. Strange things. Anyway, do a shot of Malort and you'll learn you're your own best friend. Okay, a couple of quick addendums because I am not well versed in White Sox Chicago lore. Turns out the owner of the White Sox last name is pronounced Vec, not Veek. This was the owner back in 1979, so it's Vec. And I said Veek because no one corrected me until afterwards. Thanks a lot, everybody. Hey, Beachy Dubs, when you're watching the show with the machete and I screw up, yell out a correction. And I will make sure you're right before I acknowledge it, because we all just check our sources here. So yeah, Bill Vec was the owner at the time. Also, the morning show that we're talking about was actually on Monday through Fridays, not on Saturdays. So that's two corrections. This is my biggest corrections yet, folks. But that's just so you know that I do my research and I double back. So you know that you're getting 95% accuracy when you listen to the podcast. It's so hot. I'm rambling. Anyway, we're going to go back in time to 1979, July 12th, when Chicago bore witness to the disco demolition. Oh, yeah. We're going in hot. Cold, because it's too hot out.
I can't promise that you like me, because it could go downhill. I can't promise that you love me, but you probably will.
No matter how much you want to burn this mother down, that's just fire. And that's a simple rapid oxidation of material in the exothermic chemical process of combustion, releasing heat, light, and various reaction products. Can you dig it? Because you really can't get rid of something, because nothing disappears. It just changes its form. Everything goes somewhere. That's chemicals. And everything is chemicals. I don't give a fuck what your aunt says, Goop says. Stop going to Goop. Don't take advice from a website that's selling Rachel bottoms for $84. You can get those at Mandalay for like $35. Also, you're welcome. My pop-up ads are now all kinds of pervy after doing that research. The things I do for you. The world is always moving and shaking. That's the rhythm of the universe. So just roll with it and shake your groove thing, shake your groove thing, shake your groove thing, baby. Can you dig it? Back in the late 60s, your parents' parents were bitching about that weird smell on your mom's jacket and reminding your dad he was the man of the house without actually explaining what that fucking meant outside of getting a job and never smiling again. Rock and roll was fading out of counterculture because the kids had already done the drugs and drank the drinks and were necking. That's what the ancients called Netflix and chill. And dancing was downgraded to a misdemeanor, as opposed to your parents' parents in the before times when dancing meant you were in a sex cult and had to go to a convent or join the army to get cured. No wonder everybody in photos from back then looked like they were holding in a hot fart. So, basically, the straights were winning the war against sexual expression by allowing dancing in tight 4-minute intervals of speed twisting and jitterbugging. Just let the kids get it out and at a safe distance. Because if you tried necking while doing the pony or mashed potato, you could snap an ankle and they'd have to take you out back and shoot you. Now,
The kids could holly the fucking gully but never give in to their primal urges on the dance floor. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia and New York City, the Latin, Black, gay, and Italian clubs were letting loose with the psychedelic hippies to some new dances that came out of a steady 4-4 time that hit the bass drum every beat called Four on the Floor, with a steady hi-hat brought about by Earl Young's drumming and Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes' The Love I Lost. And then Wind, Place, or Show came out in 1972 from the Intruders, making it the first disco song released in history. Although, the sweaty guy at Amoeba Records will tell you that it was Soul Makossa by Manu Dibango, who kind of taught Michael Jackson all he knew, but that came out a year later, and we don't have time for this right now. Spotify it later, and don't stop till you get it. Don't stop till you get enough. Suddenly, all these hip clubs in the city were heating up, getting hairy with a healthy glow of human spice. So, of course, it's named after a French word, discotheque, which became disco in 1973 when Vince Aletti wrote about that in the hot and steamy sexy damp dance craze at the underground gay clubs for Rolling Stone. Suddenly, counterculture meant that you could get laid on the dance floor however you like it and unveil your freak flag like a peacock on cocaine, which, by the way, literally everyone was on. And if you've ever rocked a snow bunny, you might finally understand all of your parents' wedding pictures. They were also on Quaaludes, which kind of fell out of style because they were, in essence, a date rape drug. So, if anyone ever tells you that disco was weak, remind them that it was literally a dance scene where everyone dressed like a wacky arm-waving tube person, covered themselves in glitter, while simultaneously roofying themselves and doing rails of cocaine as long as the Alaska pipeline. Your trap raves are adorable. Then in 1977, Saturday Night Fever was released, making John the Greased Chin Travolta a fucking sensation, as well as the emergence of all the standards that would forever grace every single major party in the suburbs for decades to come. If you have a bar mitzvah in the forest and don't play Celebration by Kool and the Gang, doesn't make a sound. And then, like all good things in America, starting by oppressed communities, white people wrecked it. Blew it up, more specifically. By the end of the 70s, disco sucks was the hashtag. Except back then, they didn't have the internet, so they wore it on t-shirts. Which I think makes it more savage, because you could die in a t-shirt. And that's the thing you leave behind for the forensics crew to unravel, which is why I never wear shirts with messages on them. I intend to die a mystery. Death to disco became the chant, mostly because the hardest of rockers were mad that their counterculture hipless dance tunes were being co-opted by the latest femur flailing fever tunes of the current openly sexual active counterculture. It's like it was dirty dancing all over America, but both sides thought they were baby. Rod Stewart and David Bowie took on disco songs, and I guess that was the record that questioned the DJ's sexuality, breaking the back of former Detroit shock jock Steve Dahl. Yeah. Dahl had taken up with a former Chicago rock and roll station, WDAI, in 1978 after moving to the city. And he was promptly fired for refusing to play disco. And if you know your comic book villains, you can kind of guess where it goes from here. So, Steve hooks up with DJ Gary Meyer at WLUP. And then he started the morning show on Saturdays called Steve and Gary. And they made it their mission to shit on disco all the time. Calling this former station Disco D-I-E instead of Disco D-A-I, did a parody of Rod Stewart's Do You Think I'm Sexy called Do You Think I'm Disco? You know, cutting edge jokes. And in no way a butthurt bro down. And in his quest to become the disco dictator that decimated Getting Down because it kicked him in the dick for not digging the scene, he and Gary went to the son of White Sox owner Bill Veeck, Mike, and along with the sales and promotions director of WLUP, came up with a radio promotion tie-in with the Sox called Disco Demolition. Here's the pitch. Disco sucks, right? No? It's more popular than anything I like? Fuck you, it sucks! We should give discounts to anybody who brings in disco albums to the Sox Park and the Detroit Tigers doubleheader on July 12, 1979. The price was set at 98 cents after the call sign for the station. And then we're going to pile them all together in center field and blow them up in between the two games. At the time, the Sox were not having a good year. In fact, they were like 40-46, I think. And the previous night's game attendance was a third of the stadium, so why the fuck not, right? What could possibly go wrong when you give a crazy discount to Chicago sports fans and invite them to participate in a mass explosion? So the night arrived, and even Steve didn't think people would show up. Even Sox owner himself, Bill Veeck, checked himself out of the hospital because he was afraid this was a stupid idea. It was, but not in the way you'd think. The doubleheader actually sold out, packing the place to capacity, which was 44,492 fans, leaving 20,000 fans outside. The Sox lost the first game, and then Steve took the field dressed like Idi Amin at a yard sale in a Jeep surrounded by his posse, drunk and, quote, smelling like marijuana, or says Mike Veeck. Before leading the crowd in the war chant, "Disco sucks," he takes the mic and says, quote, "This is now officially the world's largest anti-disco rally. Now listen, we took all the disco records you brought tonight, we got them in a giant box, and we're gonna blow them up real good," end quote. Prompting the beer-drunk crowd to get frothy. It's worth noting, at this point, the crowd started ninja-disking the uncollected records into the field, slicing like booby traps in an Indiana Jones movie, over the heads of the players warming up. According to Tigers designated hitter Rusty Stubb, quote, "Oh God almighty, I've never seen anything so dangerous in my life." But it ended up being okay. They popped the records off like some light fireworks your dad bought for the weekend, and then they started the game, and everybody had a great time. And if you believe that, you have never listened to disco. Steve hit up the countdown, and the giant 4x6x5 foot box exploded and tore a giant fucking crater in center field. And then the crowd stormed the field, destroying the dugouts, batting cages, and home plate was stolen, prompting Harry Carey himself to take up the mic and demand politely that folks calm down so they could, quote, "play some baseball." He even tried to lead the crowd in the chorus to "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" because people lit a bonfire and started dancing around it throwing beer bottles. On the upside, it was the largest attendance Bill Veeck had seen since he took over. On the downside, it turns out it wasn't just disco records people brought. It was Motown, blues, jazz, and, well, you get the idea. This was a mass culture riot against the new sound. And, well, Steve Dahl assures us he's not a racist, nor is he homophobic, but optics matter. And he was dressed like a dollar store general while the fans burned the fucking park down on July 12th, 1979, because disco made their bottom bits a little nervous. The second game was canceled because there was a fucking hellmouth blown into center field. And then after that night, clubs in Chicago started to refuse to play disco. Rolling Stone critic David Marsh described Disco Demolition Night as, quote, "your most paranoid fantasy about where the ethnic cleansing of rock radio could ultimately lead." And it did lead to the death of disco, or at least the end of it for the time, because it would eventually evolve into house music, finding new life in the shoulder-padded counterculture of the 80s, who were super over their parents' bullshit right here in Chicago where the ashes were still warm. Because the world is always moving and shaking. That's the rhythm of the universe. Nothing ever dies. Everything goes somewhere. When you burn something, it turns into smoke. When you block someone on Facebook, they still exist. And a bunch of bitchy white guys did not kill disco because disco is not dead. It's waiting for you to read from the book of Gloria Gaynor, inked in Adorn hairspray, summoning discotheques and the sexolets to lead you to the atomic future, four on the floor, forever to boogie down. Can you dig it? Disco for life. I love you. Good night.
Show, sweet number one. She's a weather.